This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Everybody get up.
After 8 on a Monday, we continue. Joining us from it's not a new organization, it's a
a rebranded organization.
Okay.
It is new in some ways, you know, but I mean, we are a news rep, but you know a lot of us from SoftRep, but you know, it's, I guess I would just call it the same old thing with a broader emphasis.
Okay, all right. So a rebranded organization, News Rep, formerly known as Soft Rep. So joining us is a senior writer, which is an August position. All you have to do is look at the amount of content he rips out on that website, and you'll know. Alex Hollings, who's being accosted because somebody got a cell phone number. So talk to your life is always exciting. What's it like to have such an exciting life?
It sucks, man. I prefer a boring life, But I gotta tell you, it's par for the course to a large extent. When you write about foreign policy, politics inevitably bleed into foreign policy. As much as I try to avoid domestic politics in my work, you know, it's impossible to insulate foreign policy from domestic policy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people get mad, and that's totally reasonable, you know. I'm wrong sometimes. Everybody is, you know. I write opinion pieces that inherently mean I'm taking a position that is opposed to someone else's. I very rarely write an opinion piece that I think no one will care about, right?
Right.
If I write an opinion piece, it's because I'm seeing something out in the world that I feel like I want to, you know, articulate on. So I do get a lot of hate mail. I get way more positive feedback than I do negative feedback, but I think this is probably true for anybody. You tend to focus more on the negative feedback, right? So for the most part, I try to avoid and just kind of ignore the trolls, right? If you engage with me on Twitter and you're writing in all capital letters and swearing at me, I will respond to you once, respectfully giving you the benefit of the doubt, assuming that you didn't think I was going to read it and you're just heated, you know? If you can't engage me back respectfully at that point, then I just cut you off. I don't have time for it, you know? I'm not here for a Twitter war. I don't like flame. I don't want to have a beef. You know, so I try to stuff. And I think that to some people that becomes frustrating. And they really want me to know how mad they are. So somebody got their hands on my cell phone number. I couldn't tell you who or how. But ever since then, my phone has just been blowing up with accusations of me not knowing what's going on and America's conducting the chemical weapons attacks in Syria. And, you know, Russia's the good guy, obviously.
Obviously.
America's the bad guy.
And anybody who doesn't see that must have rocks in their head.
I gotta tell you, man, the nicest part of these phone calls and accompanying voicemails have been how frequently they accuse me and James Mattis of working hand in hand on these war crimes.
We know how it is.
You know, that's some kind of craze.
You Marines working together.
That I'm being well paid by Mattis to advance his narrative. And, you know, honestly, I consider that pretty high praise that he assumes the Secretary of Defense and I are just like hanging out.
We're boys.
Coming up with ideas to frame Russia.
Yeah, Mattis is yelling in the Pentagon, get me Hollings.
Yeah, that's the guy.
That's
I need
me.
Hollings.
How did you?
60 New York Times writers, but I need Hollings.
How did they put it all together? Damn it! I hate when that happens. But how would they?
My
have
cover's got, blown, man.
Exactly, Yuri. How would they have gotten your phone number?
Well, you know, so that's a great question.
Thank you.
To be honest, I've gotten threats in the past. I wrote a story about a suspected assassin ring. What it really was a group of former veterans, mostly in the special operations community, that did security contracting work. But some of that work was questionable. You know, they're doing these contracts, OCONUS, mostly through a shell corporation that's also based outside the United States.
Explain.
So they didn't have to adhere to the rules.
Okay, explain Okonis.
Okonis is an outside the continental U.S., right? So they're not doing security for Halliburton or AT&T or any U.S.-based company. They're doing security for wealthy individuals and corporations that are based outside the U.S., operating outside the U.S., and because their company that disseminates the funding is also from outside the U.S., they're able to circumvent a lot of the rules and regulations pertaining to what you can do as a paramilitary organization.
Which makes you feel really good about the thought of privatizing the war in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah, I've got a lot of opinions. I've got some strong opinions on that. So I wrote a story about this. And in the story, I was clear. I was like, there is evidence to suggest that some of the people within this organization, have some nefarious intentions. Not everybody, but some of the people. And I immediately got emails from, deathstalker666 at hotmail.com telling me that I don't know who I'm messing with. You take those threats seriously anytime you get them. And I'm sure anybody who's heard me on here a bunch of times before knows I did have someone try to burn my house down last year, and I don't know who or why. So I take these things seriously, So when my phone started blowing up, it's a crackpot. It's a crazy guy just shouting at me. But I do take these threats seriously. Every time something like this happens, I reassess my entire security setup around my house. I pull out all my guns, clean them, give them a good maintaining once over, and then sit up all night watching my security cameras waiting for something bad to happen. But I try not to let it get to me too much because that's what they want, and it's tough to find that balance.
So, with all that said, how do they get your phone number?
So my initial thought was either someone that I used to work with gave it to someone who gave it to someone who gave it to someone with no real ill intent, I mean, after all, I'm a journalist. I give my phone number out to lots of folks.
Okay.
And I don't always know the people who have my number because someone will go, oh, if you've got a good story, I know a guy. His name's Alec Collins. Let me give you his number. And that's an important aspect of my job. But thus far, it hasn't really been a big issue because, especially within the military and the veteran community, a lot of times when someone's like, oh, I know a guy who can help you with this story, and they give out my number, it's often someone who needs help or someone who's got something good that they're trying to get some exposure.
So it's
very rarely negative stuff.
You don't think,
Honestly, what I really think at this point, I think that it turns out there's these websites out there like whitepages.com and stuff where you can pay like $4 to get, someone's cell phone number, home address, credit report, traffic violations. I was unaware of this until this happened because I was trying to
find...
Wait
a minute, how can you get their credit report?
I'll tell you, I haven't done it myself, but I did find...
I think you should do that. In fact,
personal information about myself.
I'm tasking you with writing that story.
I can tell you this. Google yourself, which I usually try not to do. You'll be disconcerted, I think.
I don't like doing
by
that.
How much of your personal information is available online. I had, previous home addresses... My old office phone number was listed publicly on some of these websites.
Yeah.
I can only imagine the poor guy who works in that office now who's probably fielding phone calls from crazy people about foreign policy. the internet's a shady place, man. But I'll say this. It's every once in a while when you get these kind of really negative responses where somebody's coming after you and trying to push an agenda down your throat, in a weird way, it motivates me. Because it means that the work that I'm doing...
Like a cockroach, right?
Yeah, I pissed somebody off who, from the looks of it, either supports or is backed by the bad guys, as far as I'm concerned. This guy's got...
Okay, hold on. I've got two questions for you. One is from one is ringing in my ears right now from my partner in the third hour, retired Marine Corps gunner Mike Musselman. Do you believe that the comment section of any periodical or anywhere ought to be turned off because it imperils the existence of mankind? Because the comment section of all these things simply make the case that we can't do enough to hasten our mass extinction. So if you link that together, the comment section is the worst thing we do as a culture. It is the most stupid, mindless people writing the stupidest shit you've ever heard in your life, which makes a case for the forced mass extinction of the planet. Do you believe that to be true or not true?
See, you put me in a tough spot here.
It's really not a tough spot. It's a pretty valid, well, logical syllogism.
It's an important part of my job is interacting with readers.
One
of the ways that I do that, I'll say this. I think that the comment section in many places is poison. A good, for instance, that I can, you know, pulling from personal experience, on NewsWrap and formerly SoftRap, you can't comment on those articles unless you're what's called a team room member or a subscriber, right? So when you subscribe, you know, you're signing up for all these things and you get access to the writers and stuff like that. And the intent is to create a dialogue. That's really the point, right? So because of that, the comment section on our site is pretty heavily moderated. It's very rarely moderated by employees. It's kind of socially policed. When people are being crazy or out of line, the other subscribers, you know, we have a party every year in Las Vegas where people can come and meet us for free and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But it's a community. So within that community, there's very low tolerance for trolling.
Well, you know, you but know? Here's what I think. I don't think they should just, I don't care who it is, I don't think they should be allowed to post unless somebody reads the content. Otherwise, it's just garbage. If you want a quick way to leave a website, look at the comment section, right?
You're totally, and honestly,
and
it's not just stupid people being stupid. It's also concerted efforts to misinform.
Yeah, and then there's there's people on popular on more popular platforms. Also, they just put up advertising content. And so,
absolutely.
And so it's, you know, it is
Russia
stupid.
Employs people, I'm sure other people do too, but Russia employs people specifically to engage in conversation in the comment sections of prominent media outlets, to skew conversation towards a friendlier approach to Russia. This isn't a secret. You know, Russia actively employing, you know, we say Russia's troll armies. They're not really trolls. You know, trolling is when you're just harassing people to get a rise out of them. That's not what Russia's doing. There's an intent. What Russia does is it's hybrid warfare is what it is. They have some guys who are focused solely on, you know, hacking and cyber warfare in the traditional sense. Then they have a whole other sect of the department that's focused just on perception management. That includes Twitter, Facebook, the comment section on the New York Times. Their job is to try to sway American perception by posing as fellow Americans who just disagree, who think that the New York Times or the Washington Post or NewsRep are falsely representing the narrative to hurt Russia. Russia's foreign ministry they've got this long-standing kind of MO where they always claim there's an anti-Russia conspiracy from the West. They use it all the time. The idea is every time we accuse them of using nerve agents against, you know, Sergei Skripal in Salisbury, England earlier this year, they were just recently accused of trying to break into the laboratory in Switzerland that was doing the analysis on the Novichok nerve agent they used. When these things happen, when these stories break, Russia always comes out and goes, man, this is that same anti-Russian conspiracy.
Yeah, where
does it come
from?
And then when you go on the New York Times, then you go in the New York Times or one of these other large international outlets that people go to in Moscow just as readily as they do, you know, in Atlanta, and you read the comment section beneath an article about UN allegations of Russia backing Syrian chemical attacks.
It's hilarious.
And the top comments will always be, this is a false narrative. You know, America did these chemical attacks. Because that way you end up seeing it. And now, source amnesia is where this becomes important.
Okay, hold on. One question before you go to source amnesia. How many times?
Yeah, sorry, man. I'm all riled up about this.
Yeah, you are. You were like the easiest interview in the world. Alex, how you doing? 57 minutes later.
Let me talk to you for an hour about Captain John with the car.
No shit. So, how many times do you think we've had to rehold the formation to upgrade the dude whose idea it was to let's use these platforms and do election meddling in this way this time? How many different stars does he have on his Order of Lenin right now, do you think?
To a certain extent, I don't think it was a new revelation. I think it was a natural progression.
That wasn't the question. How many stars does that son of a bitch have on that award?
See, I doubt he's got any, because the credit was claimed by Putin, I'd assume. He was he heard it from 10 different guys, and then he was like, you know what, I have a great idea.
How many stars does he have on his secret Order of Lenin? He's got about 100. Because they're watching this and saying, this is beyond our wildest imagination.
Oh, man.
In terms of inducing friction, we have Robert Mueller continuing to wade through. Now, the beauty of our system is that we'll survive this. You know, we'll survive this.
Absolutely.
We'll become better for it. But still, the guy who has this, he is living the life in Moscow right now. He is living, or she is living.
No, they don't even have to try very hard. You know, we have this.
No.
We try to imagine that it's this, like, really complicated, concerted effort, you know, full of secret squirrel shit that we just really can't wrap our heads around. And it's not. It's a group of guys in a room who look at, honestly, a lot of times trending American. America loves a conspiracy theory. You know, 9/11 truthers, you know, people who assume we never landed on the moon, people think the CIA killed Kennedy.
Right. And
America
if you could imagine that kind of operation center, right, trending, right, top 20 topics which have the most vitriol in terms of dialogue. All right, so here's
that's Russia's actively involved in the vaccination versus the anti-vaccination dispute on social media right now is a perfect example of that.
Right, so consistently sowing discord in America dialogue, and look, we've got a perfect setup. We've got polarized political parties. We've got media set up under both of those parties that will go to war. We simply have to keep inflaming that so that we can undermine their ability to work together to achieve growth. Hopefully they focus
inward. And a perfect example of that, and I cite this one often because I think it's not a real secret that I tend to have conservative-leaning views, right?
Uh-oh.
You know, I've got some liberal views, but, like, I'm a gun owner. I'm big on defense. You know what I mean? I can't deny these things. But a recent study, I think it was like 3 or 4 months ago, conducted by the Pew to determine, you know, just general American, you know, perceptions towards popular figures, listed Kim Jong-un as better liked among Republicans than Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
That's a perfect example
of
Russia's success in this endeavor. The intent wasn't to get one guy elected one time. The intent was never to honestly even get Robert Mueller to start investigating, although that was like a big advantage for them. It was a big benefit. It was some frosting on the cake. The intent has always been to keep us focused on fighting amongst ourselves. And it's not just the United States. If you look in Europe right now, there's like a real rise in more conservative, more right-leaning, authoritative, in some cases, governments throughout Europe, throughout Eastern Europe especially. A big part of that is because what Russia is trying to do is help motivate this aggressive discourse within the nations. I mean, when you look at places like Ukraine is a great example. Ukraine was in the process of passing referendums that were very friendly to Russia when protests broke out within the nation because they were mad about these Russia-friendly referendums. And Russia took that opportunity to annex Crimea. You know, while Ukraine was fighting amongst themselves, Russia was like, well, we're not going to wait for you guys to figure it out. We'll just take Crimea. You know, this is, and it's important to note that Ukraine represents a very big buffer between Russia and NATO powers, you know, west of Ukraine. They're worried about letting NATO creep up onto their borders. So making sure that Ukraine, for instance, as one example, stays fighting amongst themselves, making sure that it's turmoil within the Ukrainian government, helps them ensure that Ukraine doesn't move further to the west. It helps them keep that buffer there. The most important thing they can do in a place like Ukraine is keep them fighting with each other. Then they use the same method all the way over here in the United States and everywhere else in between. Because as long as we're fighting with each other, we're giving Russia the breathing room it needs to hopefully, as far as they're concerned, claw their way back to being a legitimate power instead of having to garner headlines with their make-believe doomsday weapons.
All right, next question for you, all right, is this. The Associated Press is reporting within the last 30 minutes that it has obtained tens of thousands of files from within the WikiLeaks organization exposing the internal workings of the secret spilling site. What do you think? What goes around comes around, I guess, is the first thing that comes to mind. What do you think's going to come out of that? Do you think out of some of those files is going to come the mode?
Primarily,
the mode in which they got their hands on a lot of the files that they used?
I think anybody who's still holding out on the idea that Julian Assange or WikiLeaks has been a noble, objective enterprise, I think this will put an end to that. You know, WikiLeaks, just like any other organization that seeks power, especially through covert and, you know, effort, has a motive. They've always had motive. They have objectives that they're trying to attain. You know, and they kept them under wraps pretty successfully. You know, in the most recent election, it became a little bit clearer that they were picking sides. But I think the idea of the noble spy trying to tell America what's really happening behind the shroud is a romantic one that we like to believe in because we like the idea, we romanticize the idea of whistleblowers. I'm not saying whistleblowing is a bad thing. There's a way to do it that I can support. There's a way to do it that I can't. And I think that this will be for anyone who's paying attention, because it depends on what Donald Trump tweets tomorrow, whether or not this becomes like a real story. But for anyone who's paying attention to the WikiLeaks story, I think it'll finally put the nail in the coffin of anybody who thinks that WikiLeaks is the trustworthy news organization that they hoped it might be.
Yeah. You know? And maybe his little reign of terror might be coming to an end too.
We make the mistake of assuming that, like, the dark horse candidate is the good guy, you know? We think that the Cobra Kai dojo are the bad guys because they've been practicing every day for 10 years. And Danny, our young karate kid, who's out of nowhere, must be the good guy because he's the underdog. Being the underdog doesn't make you good. It just makes you the underdog. And I think that that's probably what we'll see.
All right, any thoughts on let me give you a kind of an angle on a story about the about what's going on in North Carolina right now, which is the discussion about flood insurance and how it's handled. The first disaster will be weather related. The second one will be financially related. The majority of people in North Carolina will not have flood insurance. So they will have the option of taking out FEMA loans. Those loans, after a certain period of time, will be bundled and sold, and depending on who buys them. And because they're coming out of North Carolina, which has a pretty rural population by American standard, urban standards and disasters, they will normally sell quickly those in the secondary market because rural people tend to pay their bills. Now, not all of them. All right, but you're talking a lot of people that are kind of the salt of the earth that have, they tend to have higher than normal.
They tend to live within their means.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so then what happens is you have these jackasses who buy those loans, and then when you want to take out another loan, right? Let's just say you want to take out a secondary mortgage. You can't take out that mortgage because you have this other FEMA loan. And now it's being held by the Bank of Hollings. And you call them and they say...
Yeah, Collections Limited,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
You, in order to do that, we're happy to help you, but you're going to have to pay off your loan with us, and that will invoke the premature premium that goes with the loans relative to the paper that you signed and subject in which you're subject since we bought your loan. What? And people, I mean, it's this financial, it's a financial debacle that to me not needs to be solved by some form of public policy adjustment in the United States. So you're seeing the weather part of this is bad. What will happen financially subsequent to that is equally as bad, if not worse, because it will kill some people who won't be able to go back to their homes.
It'll almost certainly ruin more lives than the storm did.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and it will take 10 years for them to repair the damage that will be done to their city.
And that's actually the problem. That's the reason why solutions to these problems are so hard to come by. Is that for the most part, in America, we have a lot of times it's a problem. This lack of personal responsibility. When we see something on TV we don't like, we shout at Congress, the Senate, and the President to pass a law to fix it. You know, a lot of times it's something a law can't fix, but that's how we do it. You know, we shout at the government to fix it. When the government can't fix it, when it lies outside their purview, we shout at corporations to fix it. We tell Twitter, it's your job to make sure that I don't see Alex Jones. You know, we tell Facebook, you better get rid of everybody we don't like, or get rid of the fake news, because I can't be counted on to, you know, sift responsibly through my newsfeed. The problem is that because we are governed by emotion when it comes to stuff like this, a story only has legs so long as it elicits an emotional response. I run into this with my work a lot because there are stories that are important that we should be talking about. But right now, there's no outrage tied to it. There isn't a hashtag tied to the story.
It has no legs.
It's not going to get as much traction.
So
it's got no legs.
Doesn't
you
have
know?
Legs. So again, the boring piece of this is the finance. Okay.
And the problem is that it's slow developing.
Right.
And 2 years from now, when someone loses their home, no one gets the shit in the news cycle.
Right. No, you're right.
But
the grown-ups someplace ought to. So what I would submit to you is I don't care if we're talking about flooding in the Mississippi Delta. I don't care if we're talking about major tornadoes that exceed homeowner home insurance. I don't care if we're talking about any of that. There ought to be a national program that is part of it is you're paying $1 or $2 a month out of your mortgage for that should your area be declared a national, you know, a disaster area, blah, 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 that you're automatically covered by this insurance, whether it be earthquake or flood, and you don't have to go through this. Yeah, the people that chose to spend $400 a month, they're going to get their homes rebuilt, but you who didn't, to me, these natural disasters are too big, and there ought to be a different mechanism that gets used that all Americans.
I can hear the hardcore conservatives getting angrier at the idea of the government intervening in, you know. However, let me make a good fiscally conservative argument in favor of that. When you're talking about these communities, Hurricane Katrina is a good example. What is that? What was that, 2005? You know, just decimated New Orleans. I went and visited New Orleans in, I think, 2012, maybe it was 2013, and it was still decimated.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In large part because of this. This is the reason. The discussion we're having right now already happened once, and America stopped caring a year after it happened, you know?
Yeah.
And when you go and look at New Orleans, I bet you today there are still some spots in the city that are in rough shape as a result of that storm. I mean, some spots were in rough shape before, but far rougher now, right? The problem that we run into here is that these predatory practices hurt the national economy. Because when people can't afford their house, when people can't afford to live, when on neighborhoods and towns and communities can't do day-to-day operations like they used to, money stops flowing as readily within those communities, right? When money stops flowing as readily within those communities, that has reverberating effects further and further out into the national economy. The local economy is crippled. As a result of the local economy being crippled, the rest of the economy has to compensate and adjust for the fact that there's no money changing hands in this part of the country anymore. That hurts everyone. That hurts business. New Orleans is a big city. When New Orleans shuts down for business, millions of dollars stop changing hands. Those millions of dollars are going to make their way to San Francisco and to Washington, D.C. and to New York City. They can't anymore if they stop changing hands. When a big natural disaster like this happens, it's in our best interest to get the community back up on its feet and spending money again, making money, spending money. Right. Commerce is the lifeblood of this nation. It's not sexy, but it's true, you know? And so when we let banks kind of run these people into the ground, because, you know, their success rate is maybe 30% on loan repayment, right? When it comes to stuff like that, these people who are in impoverished communities already, they have to pay for wherever they're living while paying down the loans for wherever they used to live in the cases where they lose their house. These people are crippled, financially crippled. And I'm sure plenty of the listeners know what it's like to be kind of painted into a corner with your finances. I mean, I'm a writer, man. I make a good living now, but that wasn't always the case. You know, I'm very familiar with what it's like to go to the checkout counter and be afraid that my card's going to be declined. You know, it was just a few years ago that I was living that life every day. When you live like that, the economy around you changes. When an entire community lives like that, it hurts all of us. It's in our best interest to get these cities working again the way they're supposed to. And if that means intervening a little bit in the free market where there's predatory practices, I would call that the lesser of two evils.
Well, and again, I would even, look, we're all, when disasters strike, it's in nobody's interest for all these people to be losers because, you know, they're middle class and they cut a corner and they didn't buy flood insurance or they didn't buy earthquake insurance. That risk is the way insurance works is you spread risk over a large body and it pays for itself. And so to me, as Americans, we have a choice. We can pay for all this reconstruction on the backside through Congress, right, through our taxes. Or we can be a little bit proactive relative to homeowners anyway and business owners to a certain extent and have a program that spreads that risk and everybody's covered. You are
and that's the beauty of the horrendous bureaucracy of our government,
right,
is that we can be awfully specific about legislation that we pass.
Right.
You know, this law that you propose in 16 words will be 75 pages. Anybody votes on it.
Right, and then as people get in and say, okay, who qualifies? Are tornadoes in or out? You know, tornadoes
exactly.
Part
of homeowners insurance? They're going to pick the nits.
Right, and so then you have the insurance industry lobbying that homeowners...
Oh, see, that's the problem.
Right, and like, look, if we can get tornado insurance kicked out of our coverage of homeowners insurance... Okay, because all these things are quote unquote acts of God and kicked into that. What that will do to our profit margins is poof, through the roof. So start the lobbying. But again, that's politics. My point is the financial calamity that will strike that region on the heels of the physical calamity that befalls them now is something worth investigating, and how do we stop? And then there'll be an out-migration, much like there was in New Orleans, and that's not good for the city anyway. So anyway, just a thought.
And it's not good for the country to lose these houses
right.
either.
You know what I mean? You're right, and what you would want is...
If you're in Oklahoma right now, North Carolina is still your problem. It's indirect.
Oh, trust me.
But you know, it's not just that they're fellow Americans.
You're going to pay.
You know.
You're going to pay?
Yeah.
All right, let me switch gears and let's talk about things you've written. You sent me a series of links. Talk to me about the most compelling thing that you think you've written in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, man, that's tough. Everything I read compelling.
I
Everyone should go put down.
You know what? I knew how hard of a question this was going to be, hence the reason I posed it.
I tell you what, first and foremost, everybody should click on everything I write, even if you don't read it, just because it makes me look good.
Uh-huh.
the most compelling thing, I want to say maybe not the most compelling on the national level in terms of what's gotten attention, but something that I think is very important.
Yes.
Is the way the media, particularly the defense media, covered, you know, so Russia twice in the past month scrambled Tu-95 long-range bombers. They're kind of RB-52s. It's the airborne part of their nuclear triad, right? They fly these bomber missions near Alaska with relative frequency, you know, maybe a half dozen times a year. Sometimes they're accompanied by fighters. In one of these instances, they were accompanied by Su-35s, which are probably Russia's most capable fighter platform. It's pound for pound a pretty good match in a lot of ways to an F-22, except it lacks the stealth capability, which keeps the F-22 superior to it. But
which
if they're
is
looking
a,
at each other, that's a tough fight.
Yeah,
you
which
know?
Is a fairly substantial component of the F-22.
Yeah. The F-22, I would argue, trades heavily on its stealth capabilities. That's
Hello.
What makes it the F-22.
Hello.
But it is, however, one of the most capable and maneuverable jets he's got. You know, not quite an F-15 caliber, but if there's going to be a dogfight, it's an F-22 I want in it, right?
Okay.
So the F-35 is a good plane. It's a damn good plane.
Hold on. Go back to the
F-35, excuse me.
Go back to the intercept.
These Russian flights have been going on right outside Alaskan waters with relative frequency for years now.
Forever.
The problem is the way the media covers it.
Oh, my God.
You know? So,
you know, can I tell you something? Is that you started talking about this, and I thought, uh-oh, because I ridicule those news reports, okay, when they come on. This shit's been going on for years. We've been intercepting them forever. Whether it gets in the news or doesn't get in the news is simply a function of, is it sexy that day to throw that shit in there? It's a routine event done all the fucking time. And I thought, am I going to have
but
to see, drop
you're
this?
Following, you're following into the trap that I'm concerned about. This is you're right. You're not wrong that this happens
Thank
all
you.
The time and
Thank
that
you.
It is pretty much routine.
Thank you.
The problem is that is the point. The point of these frequent flights is for us to grow complacent towards them.
Oh,
is for us to disregard
now
them.
You're going to get in the black helicopter, and then what happens?
See, so there's two strategic reasons to fly these long-range bomber missions. The first one is to gain operational capability. You know, you're training.
Your
pilots need this training, right?
Second?
They are, it's important to note, training for offensive operations against the United States.
Correct.
We should probably keep that in mind.
Correct.
When we're watching them do it, but it's training. The other reason they do it, especially as frequently as they do it,
is
so that we stop caring about them doing it. Not just us, the pilots they scramble to intercept.
I don't agree. I disagree with you. You're fundamentally misinformed there, and so you need to check in with Jim Mattis, your boy.
I should probably check in with him, but you cannot deny that the way the media presents things has an effect on Americans.
No, that's the point of it.
Guess what? I hate to break it to you, man, but every pilot that ends up scrambling to intercept those fighters 10 years from now is growing up in the same America you and I are in.
Yeah, but we've been doing that since, like, 1953 when they began that shit. So,
You're advancing that false narrative that because we haven't had a peer-level war or a near-peer-level war, we never will.
No, I'm just not hopping in the black helicopter with you today. Okay, what I'm saying is that this is pure and simply Russia on the march all over the world. It is a Putin narrative.
If you think
the
for a
hollow
second that something
Putin
like this doesn't
narrative.
Have narrative implications,
yes.
Everything Russia does has narrative implications.
Exactly, and that's why they do it, because they're a hollow man. They're a straw man. Okay, it's
and then,
bullshit.
And then American media scoops up those
I agree with you.
And spreads them out like butter.
And you
Don't
are...
worry about these nuclear bombers in Alaska. Don't worry. This happens all the time.
No, that's not. No, see, that's you.
Disregard.
That's your narrative. That's your narrative.
No,
that's not the narrative. No, yeah, my narrative is that it's routine. If you look at what the American media puts out, it's Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room. And then today, American fighters were scrambled in Alaska to intercept inbound Bear Delta reconnaissance aircraft or, you know, whatever, bombers. You know, this breaking now in the Situation Room. Get the fuck
I tell you what,
out of
I
here
prefer.
With that shit.
I may think Wolf Blitzer's a hack.
He is a half.
Rather, every time nuclear bombers are en route to American soil, I want every American's asshole to pucker.
Jeez. All right. Okay.
This
all right.
is the way
all right,
that
Chicken
you
Little.
Avoid complacency.
All right, Chicken Little.
You know, I'm telling you, all right, so 50 years from now, when the offensive starts with bombers in Alaska, you know, you and I are
You'll be there shaking your finger. You know, okay.
I will be.
So let me tell you how you'll know, okay? You will know because there won't be two bombers. Okay? You will see that there's something different going on in their bases. Okay.
Yeah, this is what's called normalcy bias. I'm familiar with it.
Okay, so you will see indicators that offensive action is coming. They can't just pull it out of their front pocket and
that's
do
100%
it.
True. Now
Thank
that
you.
Is 100%
Thank
true.
You.
You can't invade
Thank
the United States.
Yeah.
You Thank can't
you.
Do it.
Thank you. Thank
Our
you.
Intelligence apparatus is too big, and honestly,
so,
America's military footprint is so big that all of the world could decide they wanted to go to war with the U.S. And invading the U.S. would still be hard.
It would be impossible. Okay, so...
However...
So, Chicken Little, are you happy?
That's the same feeling the Roman Empire probably had 100 years before they fell.
And they were right.
You know?
The Roman Empire did not fall from without.
It did fall from within, you're right. But what they were doing, they grew complacent because they were invincible.
Oh! No, they didn't. They rotted from the inside... Okay.
Oh, and no one could argue we're doing that.
Okay, politically and culturally, they
rotted from the inside.
They rotted from the inside, and then the fact that it began to fall.
And then they were no longer able to defend themselves against invaders from without because
they
rotted from the inside.
Exactly.
Which sounds an awful lot like a Tuesday in the United States.
Exactly.
These are the reasons why
exactly.
we need to pay attention.
Exactly. To what goes on here internally and leadership and things like that.
Those,
and
those
not
two
get our panties in a bunch over
you don't,
the
you
same
don't have to look
damn...
expensive outside.
Okay, what's the next story? First one, I reject the first story. Do not read that. I'm telling everybody,
do not click on that.
If you're an Auburn Radio listener, do not click on that. What's the title? What's the title of that piece of crap?
When World War III starts, we can all call all Marine Radio up and be like,
"That's right.
I told you so."
We'll be broadcasting.
Meantime,
I'll be doing play-by-play.
Meantime, I would ask that Americans worry a bit when foreign nations send nuclear bombers to our borders. Call me crazy.
Look,
you know, it might happen six times a year.
If we don't...
That means six times a year, you're going to have to pull your panty wedgie out of your ass crack.
Oh, my God.
Six times a year is not so much to ask.
I say don't do it. Don't go there. It's a joke. It's a show. It's bullshit.
I say pay more attention to that than Kim Kardashian's outfit at the Grammys.
I don't think she's gone to the Grammys. I don't think she's gone to the Grammys the last few years, by the way. I'll have to check with my...
Well, I mean, she's married to Kanye West. I just assumed that
I'll have to check with my cultural advisors, which are my daughters. Now that I've rejected...
There's plenty of space in American bandwidth to get their panties in a bunch about Paris Hilton.
Now that...
I think we got a little room in our lives.
What happened to Paris Hilton? Where is she?
I don't know. I don't follow
She
that.
Fell off the planet.
But, we've got a little room in our lives to worry about actual existential problems.
Okay, so let's talk about the second most compelling story since we've rejected your most compelling story.
Well, let's see here. I got some other pretty good ones for you. Why don't we talk about how Russia's already preparing their propaganda machine for a chemical attack in Syria that may be forthcoming?
Yeah.
Because this is the story that got me attacked all over my cell phone, social media, and email chain.
Okay, but to his credit, as much as he just tried to ruin it with that previous story, to his credit, okay, you see a constant theme at the UN with Nikki Haley, our ambassador, okay?
Well, I'm a fan of, by the way. I really do like Nikki Haley.
You know what?
I don't always love her, but I think she's doing an excellent job.
Nikki Haley's going to be president of the United States someday. There's a prediction. Write that now. Okay. So there's this constant back and forth between the DOD, our ambassador at the UN, and Russia and Syria. We keep warning them. Turkey has even said, we're beginning to take additional steps around the city of Idlib. Is that how you say that? And because the last time they dropped these weapons, they'd be, you know, what came out before they actually dropped was a lot like the shit that's coming out recently. So
it's happened twice now. You know, twice just in, you know, the chemical weapons were used against, I mean, so we call them the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces, which is kind of a misnomer. I mean, it is what they refer to themselves as well, but it's really more of a loosely grouped band of organizations, you know, and they're, you know, with belief structures and ideologies that kind of, you know, land in different places on the spectrum. There are legitimately, I would argue, some dudes we would consider bad guys within the SDF.
Right.
However, their overarching goals coalesce with our own, right? So we back the SDF as the least bad guy group among just like a quagmire of bad guy groups fighting in Syria right now, right? You know, Iran's there, Turkey's there. I know Turkey's a NATO ally, but they're really not our friends.
They're really not.
The Syrian government and the Russian government are obviously not our friends. And Israel is often acting in their own self-defense, not necessarily with concerns about how it's going to affect their allies, right? So it's a complicated situation in Syria. The problem with this Russian narrative is that here in America, we're not seeing the fight. We don't, your average American does not have a really thorough understanding of what's going on out in Syria, right?
Well, I will tell you this, even for people that try to pay attention,
it's very hard. I don't know it all. Absolutely. Yeah. I know people who are there right now.
Syria is not an easy, on the scorecard?
No, absolutely not.
On the scorecard, there's a lot of crooked lines on it.
I have a feeling you could literally major in the Syrian conflict that's going on right now in grad school and graduate without a complete understanding of what's going on. That said, Russia's taken advantage of that confusion. So in the weeks leading up to a chemical weapons attack, they start planting these seeds in lesser-known Russian-owned media outlets that are then cited by the better-known ones. You know, you see RT or Sputnik, TASS, sites like that running these stories about how American-backed SDF forces are planning to use chemical weapons on themselves to elicit international support. It's going to happen any day now. They know it. They've got anonymous sources that tell them it's true. Then Russian generals cite those reports and make statements that are crazy. You know, America is backing ISIS, and they're going to use their own chemical weapons to bomb the SDF so that they have a reason to come in and take Assad out of power. Those are the narratives they've used in the last two times Donald Trump has launched missiles at Syria, and I would argue both times those missile strikes were entirely symbolic. They had advanced forewarning of where we were targeting. There was very little of actual import at the target locations by the time they were bombed, but we showed them there were repercussions for their actions, and we stopped. If our intent was to go to war with Syria and remove Assad from power, we would have used either of those attacks as justification to do so. Or any of the other, 63 chemical attacks that have happened in Syria since 2013? It's a huge number like that. What they're doing is they're planting those seeds of doubt ahead of time. Because when Assad finds himself unable to capture some territory, they use chemical weapons to clear it out. Wait 3 days and then just move in to an empty neighborhood. And they've done it twice in the past 2 years. They likely will do it again. And Russia will contend that it was the United States or Syrian civilians that did it to themselves.
You misunderstood. Because they'll claim that there was no attack. We'll attempt to send the inspectors, and then what will happen? The city will be surrounded. It will be a security zone. It will be unsafe.
And they'll let them in 30 days later when there's no evidence left. That's what they did last time, right?
Yeah, that's the playbook right there.
But then the United Nations will come forward, just like they just did. The United Nations came forward and they said, our independent investigation has yielded evidence of, I want to say, let me get you the exact number here. There was like 6 attacks that they were not able to conclusively tie to Assad's regime, and some ludicrously high number of attacks that they were able to pin on them. I don't have the exact figures.
Okay.
A number of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they come back and say that, then Russia has no choice but to, Russia can either say the United Nations is lying, those investigators are lying, which they actually, instead of been exerting influence on them to try to get them to change the story, the investigation before it's officially released, it's a separate story. They can either say, we don't believe the United Nations, which would compromise their position within the United Nations to a large extent. At a certain point, they have to accept the fact that the evidence suggests chemical weapons were used. And when that happens, Russian officials have got to come up with something to say. So they, just like they did in England with the Novichok nerve agent attack in Salisbury, England, they said England did it to frame us. You know, again, because of this big anti-Russian conspiracy in the West.
Yes.
And they're going to say the same thing in Syria. The SDF did it, or America did it, to frame us. Because we are the victim here.
Russia.
North Korea recently adopted it. Russia has mastered the art of, on one side of their mouth, threatening total world destruction, but through the other side of the mouth, constantly playing the victim card.
We're
the victim of American sanctions.
It is an art form that you watch them do it in public, and you're like, it's almost a comedy. You can very easily make a comedy.
Man, you're so right. I wonder all the time. I'm like, I think your average American doesn't ever go to the Russian Foreign Ministry's website, and that is a travesty. You know, it's like going to the National Enquirer. It's amazing.
Yeah,
you know, it's like they'll have stories next to each other that contradict each other.
They point to the ceiling, and they say, "Yes, we're going in that direction down." And you look like, "Well, no. If you point towards the ceiling, that's up. No, this direction is down." And that's what they convince you.
Two days from now, a different general is going to be like, "America is trying to confuse the world about which direction is down." A Russian official pointed in some direction that was probably down. And American officials contested it. This is exactly how they work. And this actually brings us back to that source amnesia thing, which is one of the more dangerous elements of human psychology when it comes to disinformation campaigns. When you see something often enough, you tend to remember it without remembering where you saw it. Right? An example I can give you is that I know a giraffe's tongue is black.
You do?
I don't know why I know or where I learned that. I just know that a giraffe's tongue is black. I held on to the fact without remembering the source, right? That's a really common thing because the source isn't always that important, especially when it comes to surviving in the savannah. You're not fact-checking the fact that you remember there were bears in that cave. You just know that there's bears in that cave. You don't remember why, you know. You just know, don't go there. The problem in our modern climate, this is how marketing works. When you hear those, like, Cars for Kids radio advertisements,
yes,
that song that will get stuck in your head if I sing it, will get stuck in. That's why they're so successful, is because they created a way to force you to remember their phone number and name.
Yeah.
You know, other radio commercials will just repeat it. Legitimate market analysis done to determine how many times you've got to repeat a word within a 30 or 60 second interval to make sure that it stays in the human subconscious.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So I'm doing this presentation, and I've coined the term post-traumatic winning. Okay? And it links the path of a warrior from recruit training all the way to when you go home to the woods of Georgia and how you understand the experience, how you anticipate certain events in the experience to include being traumatized, how you get your hands around that, how you return home, and in returning home, you leverage your own quote-unquote suffering, to quote Viktor Frankl, into benefits for other people. When you do that, you feel you have Grinch moments when his heart grows when he hears the Who people sing. And in that way, you're at peace with what you've been through because you're using it to the benefit of others, and it makes sense, and you continue to live your purpose-driven life that tends to motivate us to a certain extent at home, tranquilly, with your family, in your community. Post-traumatic winning. So,
that's awesome.
How about that, huh? That's some serious shit,
that's
isn't
awesome.
It?
That's fantastic. Okay. That's awesome.
Now, have you ever heard of post-traumatic winning? No.
I hadn't, no.
No.
I like that. That's great.
Isn't it? So does that do that? It's kind of like, right, first do no harm, no better friend, no worse enemy, complex ideas distilled to Cars for Kids. K-A-R-S, Cars for Kids. 1-800, whatever the fuck the number is, right? That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. And sure, you know, this is the reason why.
Am I going to do it with post-traumatic winning? That's what I want to know.
Well, I'd argue you'd need to say post-traumatic winning probably 10 more times in your elevator speech, which seems counterintuitive, and when you're saying it, even feels awkward. And when you're hearing it, it feels awkward. When they repeat the same thing on that radio commercial for the fourth time in a row, you're like, okay, come on, man, get back to Soundgarden. I don't want to listen to this bullshit. But the reason why they're doing it is because it's effective. Because an hour from now, you won't remember being inconvenienced by that extra 10 seconds of ad, but you might remember the name of Clorox Bleach. You know, and that's the ultimate.
Okay, so I'm not going to hire you as a writer for the post-traumatic.
Well,
if you want me to write you a radio ad, it's different than
if you want me to write you a pitch for the elevator.
I will hire you as my advertising guy, though. So anyway,
you've got to write to the platform.
Okay.
You know, if it's going to be on Twitter,
I'm impressed.
It's got to be different than if it's going to be on Facebook.
I'm impressed. You made a great comeback in this hour from blowing up that first story and totally killing it to a fine.
I tell you what, man, you know, what I'm hearing from you is if I don't like it, it's fake news. And, I mean, it's a familiar tune. It's just not one I expected.
No,
you know?
No, no. It doesn't matter if I like it, all right? It has to do with my, first of all, borderline genius capabilities to reason. And if it doesn't pass the shit test, some people have sniff tests. I don't. I have what's called a shit test. If it doesn't pass a shit test, then I shit can it. Okay, that's how I do it.
Well, here's my question to you.
Yes.
So as a serial killer or a pedophile.
Yes.
Was hanging out in your bushes every morning.
Yes.
When you got up and went to work.
Yes, yes.
You know, eventually would you just go, you know, he's there every day.
Yes, I would.
Whatever.
I would.
Well, I wouldn't. I would prefer that pedophile wasn't in my bushes.
You don't have a right. You know? Are you going to kill the pedophile? You don't have a right. Your community.
No,
your community.
You certainly have a right to remain alert.
You scramble
your fighters to intercept.
Well, hello, your fighters.
Your fighter
is already up there. What? How much more alert can I be? Do you want me under the desk in my home? Your community's already alerted me. I know where he is.
To be aware and give a shit.
We are aware. We do give a shit. We give so much of a shit.
A
we have,
in my yard,
we
like
have
my
two F-22
family.
Fighters up there scrambling him. What do you want us to do? Stop our lives?
No, I just want you to know. That's what I want you to do. I want you to be aware. I want you to know what's going on.
I do know. You don't think I know? I know.
Yeah, but you confess that they shouldn't be covering this.
I think it's
routine. It doesn't warrant our attention.
It doesn't break squalls for me. It is part of the daily drum of world events. It's exercising muscles.
And so is Donald Trump tweeting about a new book that came out. But that still gets far more coverage.
I know, because that's what you and your friends like to talk about.
That's not what me and my friends like to talk about, man. That's what the audience likes to read about.
Exactly. And you bitches give them what they want instead of what they need. So what I'm telling you is...
Oh, no, we try to give them both.
I'm telling
right?
you.
We try to give them...
I'm telling you.
Okay.
I'm telling you,
this,
you enslaved...
This is the platform for All Marine Radio.
You enslaved ink-stained wretches, okay? You enslaved ink-stained wretches. Come to the bright side. Come to the sun, okay? Come to it. Go to the light.
I have one question for you. You changed the platform of All Marine Radio to discuss only cookie jars.
Yes.
Do you think you're going to lose most of your audience?
Absolutely.
So if a news outlet, like let's say CNN, which I'm not a fan, let's say CNN decided to stop constantly talking about Donald Trump and start focusing on, like, let's say...
Hard news.
The horrible human rights violations in Burma.
Yeah. They started to actually do news. What would happen to CNN? In this day and age?
It would go under.
It would go under.
It would go under.
Yes.
You know, the price of doing business is trying to find a way to package news in a way that anyone will give a shit about.
But no, we can't.
But we can't stop at that
because there would be some type of restraint that would need to be shown. Okay, so we can't stop at that. So what do we get? We get the Jerry Springer Show.
That's really what we are getting.
He is Jerry Springer. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I personally think so, too. Although I try my best not to be too critical of where people choose to get their news from, because I appreciate wanting to be well-informed, while having limited time. You know,
I
understand.
I agree.
It's my job
I agree.
To stay well informed. It's my job to stay apprised of things.
Right.
But let's say you got three kids. Two of them are playing sports. One of them plays the piano. They're all going, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school. So you're running all around all day. Plus you've got your job and you're working overtime. You're fighting with your spouse and you watch 10 minutes of news before you go to bed. And from that, you're supposed to glean enough about this world to be an informed voter. That's crazy. You know, that's the reason why we need a media in this country that we can trust. Right now, we don't have one. I'll acknowledge that.
Thank you.
But it's important that we have a media in this country that we can trust, that we establish relationships with.
No, they don't.
No, they're one-sided relationships.
What does it take to promote trust? All right? Think about it.
Honestly, you've got to demonstrate a reason to trust someone
over time. Thank you. And when that reason is consistently contradicted, then what? You don't have trust.
Well, the problem that we run into is your average American. See, a lot of people, and I understand the inclination to, you want to blame Wolf Blitzer for being a hack.
No.
Instead of the millions of people that watch Wolf Blitzer.
No, it's not. He's not even a hack. He's just a guy standing there reading because he's got a nice beard and good hair. Okay?
The problem is, as long as clickbait works,
yes.
It becomes the MO. It becomes what we have to do. Now, a good example is independent.
Hold on.
We're
over time. Tell everybody.
Oh, are we over time?
Tell everybody.
I'll keep going, man.
You're a machine.
I love coming on.
You're on the wrong medium, man. You need to be in the verbal because you could do it for hours. You're incredible. You're incredible.
I tell you what, Alex Jones is gone, so there's room for Alex to be yelling about crazy shit on the internet.
Exactly.
It's about time.
Then you're going to get, he just changed his name. He's back. He's living in Georgia. Where do people find all these writings we've talked about?
Well, you can find all of this work on thenewsrep.com. If you type softrep.com in, it'll still take you there. I'd be bereft if I didn't plug my book that went on sale yesterday.
Shit.
It's called The Perception Wars. How Influence Shapes Conflict, and it talks specifically about the stuff we're discussing, about Russian hybrid warfare efforts, China's efforts, North Korea's, as well as historical ones and even some American ones. The book's intent is really to help make you a better informed consumer of bullshit. You know, and most of what you see in the world is bullshit, but when you can start to see it for what it is, it becomes easier to sift through, you know? You can find it on Amazon.com if you just search Alex Hollings, or go to AlexHollings.com and, like, man, the whole top of the webpage is devoted to it. So go buy, like, 100 copies of my book. Use it for firewood, you know, build forts. Buy one for everyone you love and hate.
I've got kids to feed. I've got kids to raise. All right.
Exactly. You know, yeah. I'm trying to buy a Corvette or something, you know, or
trying to
maybe just trade in my 04 Honda CRV for an 05.
Trying to make a living here, fans. Trying to make a living. All right. Thank you very much for the discussion this morning. And good luck with your stalker.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
No, always a pleasure. And good luck with your stalker.
I'll be slightly less caffeinated next time, so I'll talk a little slower.
Look, you don't need caffeine. That's the crazy thing. Have a great one.
Yeah, you too.
There you have it. The one and only. Alex Hollings, the gunner, standing by, so don't touch that radio dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.